Hello, everybody. This is Dalton Anthony. This is a kind of a special occasion. I have a co-host with me I haven't worked with in a while. I got Zach Price with me. And we have a very, very special guest, UFC Hall of Famer, professional wrestler icon. We have Dan the Beast Severn with us tonight. So, Dan, really quick, just to kind of get things started, have you ever been to Cape Girardeau before?
No. First time ever been to this area. I've been to many places in Missouri, just not quite this south. I travel back and forth between Michigan and Arizona many times throughout the course of the year, but you look more towards the northern portion of it.
Gotcha. Well, how did you like Southeast Missouri?
Very nice.
Enjoy your time. You, with the Comic-Con over the past couple days, met a lot of fans, did a lot of talking.
Professional show, the Comic-Con on top of all of this. So
great show, by the way. Yes. Did you have a good time in the ring with those guys?
I did. Piece of cake when you have a six-man tag. Yes.
Yeah. Very simple. It was a good six-man tag.
It was really kind of funny because, like, the one gentleman I had never met before, Sarge. Yeah, Sexy Sarge. So, led to say that when I first went out there and I saw all those dollar bills hanging on the side, I'm thinking, did this guy actually, was he out there dancing all before this, or are these money that's planted? So, actually, as he's still up in the ring, I saw a lady just over the guardrail. Good-looking gal, stuff like this. I go, please don't tell me that you are one of the women that stuffed money into that man's trunks. And she's like going, oh, no. I go, come on now. Confess here right now. You didn't simply, put in a five and then try to reach in and get some singles out now, did you? She had a blast with me.
Yeah, because it was one of those. I think it was actually Zach, or it was the guy I was sitting with AC, told me, he's like, all right, we have one more dollar bill left. If Dan comes by, are you going to hit him with that dollar bill? And I was like, honestly, don't know him. I don't think I'm going to try it. But
I'm a sexy beast. Come on now.
Yeah. So you're kind of an anomaly in the world of professional wrestling, because you are the first person to ever hold the UFC and NWA champion simultaneously.
But I thought Brock Lesnar did that.
We were talking about this. It was one of those. We were watching WrestleMania 20. I had to watch the most recent WrestleMania after the fact. I was in New Orleans, so I watched to see the commentary. Uh-huh. And whenever Rousey came out, they made a comment about her being something like first UFC champion or something like that. Or I forgot what it was.
Yeah.
But there was a comment, and I was like, but Dan Severn, whenever I was a kid, was holding multiple belts to the ring, and I remember a bunch of them being UFC.
Yeah.
Because that's how I got introduced to you. Was I was just watching at 97, 98, you came out, and you had all the belts, and I was just, I was super little, and the internet wasn't as prevalent as it was.
Yes, correct.
So you were kind of the introduction of me finding different territories, because I knew WWF. But you came out with, the NWA belt.
NWA belt, but a lot of people did not know about the UFC either. So, so the fact that Jim is Cornette, he's basically very prevalent in my career over the time. He's carrying out the NWA belt. He's carrying out one of the UFC belts. I'm carrying out a couple more UFC belts. And people had never heard of the UFC because it was still in its infancy. And again, like I said before, the internet was not as prevalent as it is there today. So the UFC should be sending me some royalty checks for the fact that, Ken Shamrock was there almost 1 year before me, but he wasn't promoting the UFC. I'm walking out there with belts, hardware, UFC this, NWA that, but I'm not really saying nothing. To me, it's like the belts say it all.
And you were also in the UFC when it was during the Wild Wild West days.
During the NHB, which stood for No Holds Barred era, where most of the viewers, they understand MMA, mixed martial arts, but that phrase, those letters, did not exist until probably 2005, 2006, somewhere in that range did MMA come along. The predecessor was No Holds Barred, NHB, from 1993, December 93 forward.
Okay. And that was one of the things I got. So I've been a lifelong wrestling fan. I would say about my mid-high school, I started watching UFC. The Ultimate Fighter was on. You could catch the Saturday Night Fight ones, not the pay-per-views, but you catch those. And they would show the training grounds that they did that they did the show fights for. And they had the UFC Hall of Famers, their pictures up on the wall. And I just remember saying, I was like, that's Dan Severn. Because I remembered you from wrestling. I didn't even know you were a UFC fighter until later. Uh-huh. I just know you had a bunch of belts and you came to the ring that way. Because I was really young whenever you were doing your WWF run. So I knew those weren't that wasn't the European or the Intercontinental belt. Those were belts I didn't know. And I saw NWA, so I started, was able to watch that, but I had no idea that, I didn't know what the UFC was. And by the time I knew what it was, it completely lost my mind. Like, it was out of my mind that that's what those belts were.
Yeah.
And it was one of those, like, I didn't know that was a UFC fighter. And then I started going back and watching that, and it was so much different, because they already had the weight classes in, and they already had a lot more of the rules than what
The rules. Like, today's podcast, Mixed Martial Arts, has either 47 or 49 rules to it today. Whereas back in that no holds barred era, they had just the two rules: do not bite an opponent, and no sticky fingers in the eye sockets, no eye gouging. So, into the rules. So, no weight classes, no time periods, bare knuckled action, and it was an 8-man tournament. The same, I say 8-man because women weren't competing either at that point in time. Not until, again, into like the mid to latter 2000s did women's competition emerge into mixed martial arts as well. So again, it's been a long road, but fast forward to today, mixed martial arts is probably it has outrated a lot of other programs.
Yes.
Even a lot of the playoff games and things of that nature has overshadowed them just because of certain matchups that people really want to see.
You want
to? Okay, I'll let you ask one.
I want to go back in time just a little bit, because you said earlier you started amateur wrestling. Well, earlier when we were having dinner with you, amateur wrestling when you were in the
seventh grade, 1969.
Yeah, and then...
So as your viewers are trying to put the math, I go, geez, oh, Pete, seventh grade, 1969. Yeah, I started my amateur career in 1969. By 1971, as a freshman in high school, I started teaching the sport of wrestling. By 72, I won my first national title. And you guys were like, born when?
91,
92. Yeah. Again, I just assumed that I've been competing longer than most of the people I know been alive. It's been quite the career, to know that I utilized my amateur wrestling ability to first, I traveled the entire United States. I've traveled to every country that has ever had a wrestling program, some countries that don't even exist anymore. So quite an education, and it did pay for my education. I went to college on a full athletic scholarship for the sport of wrestling. Then I coached at Arizona State. I coached at Michigan State. I was the head wrestling coach for the Michigan Wrestling Club. So again, coaching. I left Arizona State with a teaching degree in industrial arts, secondary ed, things of that nature. So again, I've been a teacher, as I said, started teaching in 81, and then by 71, but by 1981, I ended up getting my actual certificate from Arizona State that says, hey, you are a teacher now. I just kind of smiled and go, yep, been there, just put it with the other certificates, keep on going.
So you were talking about the rules back in the early UFCs, no hair pulling, no eye gouging. No
biting, no eye gouging.
You
could pull hair, headbutt, fish hook.
So you were talking again at that dinner that we had earlier tonight. You were talking about your last professional fight was in 2012.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So that was, you had all those rules, and you fought along, like you kind of grew with the sport.
And that was interesting because.
I was going to ask, how did the rule change affect that thing?
As it was changing, it's not like we just threw a light switch and it just switched from no holds barred to mixed martial arts. It was changing state by state. So I would be in, maybe a state like North Dakota, and I've got my opponent pinned up against a cage wall down on the ground, pinned up against the wall, and I'm thinking, I don't know if I'm allowed to throw a knee to the head of a grounded opponent, for example. And I'm like, hey, ref, I'm tipping my hat to my opponent right now, but I did not have any rule violations against me. I mean, I had him down in a good hold, but the fact that I'm carrying on conversations with the referees to find out what the rules are as they are materializing, opportunities, stuff like that. That takes a lot of control.
Yeah.
Now, and if I'm not allowed to ask, you can tell me, but the Brawl for All?
Yes.
You were in the first round of that.
I was never supposed to be in the Brawl for All at all in the beginning. The Brawl for All, again, I don't know whose concept this was. Was it a success? Oh, a complete flop, failure. Okay, but at the same token, it wasn't my idea. It was management. We'll leave it like that. Management. I still don't know who did it, but
management's
got to take the blame for it. They come up with this idea that we're going to do this real like a tough man style type of event, incorporated the professional thing. It failed miserably because, you know, people tuned in to professional to watch professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. It's like, are you guys going to tune in to opera?
Probably not.
Yeah, but okay, more than likely.
So, nor am I. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm using that example. It's like, some people, they're really into that kind of thing. Some people aren't. Well, same thing there too. You don't try to put something in that doesn't belong in that sector. So it failed miserably. But when they made this announcement, you know, again, I don't remember where I was at, whatever show, was it a Monday Night Raw, was it a Tuesday Night Taping type of show, but all I know is I'm there on location, and several of the road agents just gathered up all the talent, said, let's move into the cafeteria, we got some announcements to make, so all the talent comes in the cafeteria, we got this concept we're going to do called the Bra for All. They're giving the kind of the scenario of it goes, but the only two guys that are not allowed to be in it are Shamrock and Severn. You're not allowed to be at this. So as soon as it basically said I'm not allowed to be at it, I walked out of the cafeteria. Did I listen to them more? Doesn't pertain to me. So this goes on for a couple weeks. And then, out of the blue, I'm waiting. I'm at the location. I'm waiting to see, will I wrestle tonight? Because they had this big dry ESO board set up to where all the matches are lined up right there. But matches change because if your promo went too long, if your match went too long, also they pull up the dry ration, poof, this match now is bye-bye because they have monthly pay-per-view. So there's certain storylines that must go through because it leads up to their monthly pay-per-views. And other matches simply go, well, we'll put them on next time. So I'm at the arena, waiting to see, am I going to go on? One of the road agents comes up to me and says, hey, Dad, how would you like to be in a Bra for All tonight? I'm like, against who and how much? They throw me a name, Godfather. They throw me a figure. I go, sure. But I don't want to wear the 20-ounce boxing gloves. They're like, well, you can't go out there and better not go punch. I go, I'm not going to punch him at all. I go, I will show you what a real wrestler can do without ever throwing a single strike at that point in time. And I go, I am that guy. I am the real wrestler. And, you know, they did not, they would not allow me to do it. No, it's one of those things, in hindsight, I wish I would have said, hey, no problem, just went along with it. It just walk out there, once I got out there, talk to the referee, say, hey, referee, now take my gloves off. Because he won't know any different. It's part of the show. He'll take the gloves off, and I just do what I want to do anyway. There are some moments I wish I could go back in time, but since it doesn't exist, I always say, I made whatever decision I made, I move forward. So, but it worked out the way that I wanted. I won the match, but as soon as I walked back through the curtain, the same road agent that said I was in it comes up and goes, now you're out of it. What happened? Was that the right outcome? Did not the right outcome take place? So again, management.
Yeah, because that's one of those, like, looking back at it, like, because it didn't go super well.
No.
Towards the end, like, what happened at it, but it, like, you versus Butterbean, I don't think Butterbean probably would have taken that fight at WrestleMania if it would have been like, oh, no, you got Dan Severn.
Like, well, but at the same time, I'm not known as a striker. You know, so, yeah. But it's, yeah, I like Butterbean. I've done a couple of matches with him, stuff like that, so I really have enjoyed getting to know him and stuff like that. Great character, you know.
Yeah.
So, but it, things didn't go so well for the debut, really. It was the whole purpose of that whole concept was for the introduction of Dr. Death, Steve Williams. So, yeah, it did not go all that well for that introduction because, you know, the hopes was that he was going to come on the scene and do things, and that's not the way it went.
So, and since us being leaning more towards professional wrestling, what was your favorite thing to do in, like, the sport of professional wrestling?
My most favorite thing in professional wrestling? Well, I'll say, like, highlights. The fact is that I work for the number one company in the world. I work for the WWF at the time. I was involved in a match at Madison Square Garden. So to say that you're involved in the number one company in the world, you're involved in a match at Madison Square Garden, that's kind of like the utopia now in the story. Because realistically, how many other really good, positive types of things are there? Not really, because they did not know how to utilize me. Their creative team never really came to spoke to me. I did not know how much latitude I had to speak on my part. Again, you got to realize, I'm simply just winging this, you know, by the seat of my pants. The only thing that I really wanted was a non-exclusivity clause. Because, you know, Vince McMahon nor Jim Ross or anybody else knew how old I was. And I wasn't about to simply just give you information like that because it turns out I was their oldest rookie ever at 48 years of age. Vince was shocked at the time. And when he found that out, he actually looks at Jim Ross and goes, "Well, Jim, who's our oldest rookie ever been?" And Jim just goes, "Dan." And he just, but I did not look my age, nor did I act my age. But I say this, they did not know what they had with someone like myself because I'm a guy that my word and my handshake means more than that silly piece of paper.
And I've gotten that from you over the past couple of days.
And sad to say, you need paperwork and triplicate and so on. And it still means I still got to get my attorney and to try to crush it this way because most people's word don't mean a hill of beans. And I always say, I say the statement, as a matter of fact, as I probably said it to you before, professional wrestling is the absolute worst industry I have ever been involved in. Now, as a whole, I have met some wonderful individuals in this, but as a whole, the absolute worst because it doesn't follow the most basic principles of business 101. And I've used this storyline a number of times. I go, name me, you guys know who Stone Cold Steve Austin is, correct?
Yeah, okay. Yes.
Where else, other than in the wacky world of professional wrestling, can you drink not one but two beers on the job? Tell the boss what you think of him, and then take over the company. Now, and flip people off. Okay. In the real world, if you should be, say, drinking on the job, you're fired. What's going to happen?
Oh, you'll get fired.
You're fired. And if you stick around, more than likely, they're going to call the cops on you.
Mm-hmm.
And your next next wrestling match is going to be with Big Bubba, your cellmate. And he's playing for a whole new set of obstacles. And he's going to sell you off to his roommates for smokes. You know, now had they done that professional wrestling angle, I could have bought into that because that's what happens in the real world. But I guess the theme prison bitch would not have been a very good character. Very, very few characters would have been that individual.
I mean, in that time frame, it's not something I think they would have completely dismissed.
No. Not during the Attitude Era. No. They were pushing boundaries anyway. So, to me, I just don't think they thought of that.
Yes, but you were going back to they didn't know what to do with you.
Right.
Like, I think in 2018, if they had somebody like you, I mean, top of the card. Because that's something they kind of look for now. Like, we see that with Lesnar. We see that with Rousey.
Yeah.
They have somebody that has a, quote-unquote, legitimate athletic background compared to the world of professional wrestling. And they get shot to the moon. Going back and watching your stuff, and like I said, I loved watching you in Attitude Era because you came out with all the belts, and you like, you didn't have
there was no pizzazz about me. It was just plain Jane walking out there. I'm not cutting no promos. I'm just going to take care of business.
Black trunks, gray shirt, yes. And you just went out and just destroyed people. That's Lesnar now. That's basically what he does.
But also, look, another element, WCW had a wrestler by the name of Bill Goldberg.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I ended up meeting Bill later in years at a business meeting over in California somewhere. I don't remember where, but we're at a business meeting, a few other men, and I get a chance to meet him, and we're kind of chit-chatting. And after a while of getting to know each other, he just reaches over the table and goes, "Thank you." I go, "For what?" He goes, "Dude," he says, "I was you." I go, "What?" He says, "I watched you." He says, "That those crazy eyes, auntie, stuff like this." He goes, "I played you." I'm like going, I don't lie. I go, "You did me better than I did myself." But again, a lot of it boils down to timing too. Was that the time for that to happen for you or not? Because it's kind of tough to break new boundaries in in wrestling and stuff like that, where they're used to doing things a certain way and stuff like that. And the fact that they had no control parameters on me, I was a non-exclusive contracted athlete. I could work for anybody, including WCW and ECW. They both existed. I was not exclusive to the UFC. I was not exclusive to the NWA. So I always tell people, I was my own man.
That is unheard of today.
I mean, we're having Mania matches that now people are saying, like, well, we don't know who's going to win because we don't know what their contract is. And I guess nobody would have ever knew what you were going to do because
I could do whatever I want.
Yeah, you're doing exactly whatever you wanted.
So I get that was very unique. And I once again, it's only because I did not know how to play the game with them. So they didn't really get any interaction out of me. But at the same token, it's not like they're the ones that have been in the business for how many decades now?
Yeah.
Has there been the WWE, the WWF, the WWWF? They've been in it a lot longer than I have. It's been carried through as a family tradition from Vince McMahon Sr. to Vince McMahon Jr. to who will carry the torch from that point on. So they understood the industry more, and that they hire people that are, as creative team members, say that they try to bring together the story. They should have just sat down with me and talked to me. And they would realize they've got a diamond in the rough. Jim Cornette understood this. No, Dan Severn not going to do any outlandish promos. That's not Dan Severn. Mm-hmm. Give him a mouthpiece, like a Jim Cornette. He'll do all the outlandish things. He'll wield that tennis racket and stuff like that. And he'll have a lot of fun there with it. And I'll just carry out what he says. That's all. Collect some more trinkets along the way.
Earlier during dinner, one of the fans asked you, that was with us, what's been the toughest one to perform in? Was it being a wrestler, professional wrestling, or UFC? Me personally, two thoughts went through my head. I was like, one, it's got to be UFC. Secondly, I'm kind of hoping, being a wrestling fan, that's professional wrestling. And then you said professional wrestling, and I was in shock.
Yes.
Why was it so much tougher on your body?
Well, I mean, I've been hurt far worse in my professional career than I have been in my cage fighting career. Again, I keep using the term cage fighting because of mixed martial arts versus MMA. It's all cage fighting to me.
Yes.
You know, because I just try not to just pigeonhole myself into one category. In an actual mixed martial arts match, you just had to go out there and get results. Mm-hmm. I'm not filling a window of time. I'm not telling a storyline. I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here to get the victory. That's all it really boils down to right there. So a match could be done in, what, I think the fastest matches in the UFC, I think around 8 seconds.
Yeah, I think Ronda Rousey just...
Yeah,
so yeah, it was a punch and out, yeah.
So I just know, like, sub 10 seconds, and you get paid buku bucks for a 10-second match. You know, it's not by the hourly rate. But in professional wrestling, you're telling a story. And you're telling a story through a physical means. And it means you're going to give and you're going to take. You're going to pick up and you're going to body slam. You're going to close line. You're going to, you know, drop toe hold. You're going to spin, twist for maybe a 7 to 10 minute match. Maybe a 10 to 12 minute match. Guys used to do 1 hour matches. You know, Broadway's, they don't do that, those kind of matches anymore because, well, the audience's attention span is...
Yeah.
Dwindle that. You know, they want more and more spin, top, bobble, boo, boo, boo. It's too much. Again, in my opinion, that's not my cup of tea of watching either. I prefer the old-fashioned characters, whether you're the face, whether the heel. I like seeing the over-the-top characters that are great facial expressions, over dramatization with their body language, stuff like this, wearing outlandish outfits and stuff like this.
I see both sides of the argument. One of the matches that still holds up to this day is the Iron Man between Shawn Michaels and Bret. Well, that was a 1 hour match. It still holds up to this day, and it didn't need all the high flying, flashy stuff. It just it was great. So yeah.
And how long ago did that match take place? Did that
98 or 7, 98 or 6? One of the two.
I think it was 96. Yeah, 96.
Mm-hmm,
yep. But again, how many people do even know what an Iron Match term even means anymore? Even though they always say, you always announce matches have to have a 1 hour time limit.
Yeah,
they're not even.
The Ironman basically has been dwindled down to 30 minutes now. The few times they had them.
Because they did one Sasha Banks versus Bayley in NXT. They did a 30-minute Ironman match. Yeah.
I think that
was the last time they did one, I think.
Yeah. Speaking of an hour, and because you mentioned this to me earlier, and I was quite shocked. I believe it is this belt.
Yeah, I gotta say that. You know, when it comes to belts, this is the ultimate belt. It's the smallest belt that I have, but it's what I cherish the most because this was still during the 8-man tournament format. So the same 2-hour format that exists today existed back then, but where you face one opponent on a show today, back then you had to face and defeat 3 men. I say 3 men because women were not competing at this time. So out of a 2-hour pay-per-view, I was inside of the octagon cage just over 1 hour between my 3 different opponents. So that was back during the no-holds-barred time frame. So it still only had the 2 rules: no biting, no eye gouging. So that was tough.
That's real deal. 1 hour. That's no joke. Running out of time here because we got 30 minutes. Do you have a final question? And then I got a final question too, but if you want to go first, you can.
In the world of cage fighting, if there was one person that said, "Dan, I want to fight you in 5 months," who would it be? Give you time to train, give you...
I have no axe to grind with any of the young talent coming up. If anything, I would rather go towards more of a vintage old fart that I would do a match for. There's no secret about it that in my final several years of competition, I adamantly was seeking out just 3 matches. Right in order, I wanted a Mark Coleman, a Ken Shamrock, a Hoist Gracie. If I could finish out my career with that, 1, 2, 3, just like that. But, you know, Mark has had a couple hip replacements. He's got hard artificial hips, so I mean, he's off. He's off that list. You know, and I've gotten a chance to get to know Mark a little bit more, so I mean, we've become, you know, friendly and that towards each other. I've helped him out a number of times for getting him bookings on different things. And actually, just more recently, he threw a couple bookings my way. So I'm thinking, it must be all cool and kosher at this point in time. But Shamrock and Hoist Gracie are still viable commodities. I mean, I was supposed to face Ken Little over 2 years ago for an event that he had signed an LOI, a letter of intent. He even took a cash advance. And he was supposed to have done a match with me on a Sunday. Again, I can't give the exact dates because I don't remember those dates, but it's going to take place on a Sunday. And yet, then he starts making his Twitter announcements that he's got a big announcement coming up. I think it was about to announce him and I, his match. No, he announces he's about to do a match with Hoist Gracie on Bellator. So I had to make the company aware to say that, you know, Ken's about to do this. You might want to, you know, make some phone calls, get things in alignment. I just say that the match never materialized for a lot of different reasons, but those are about the only 2 people that I could are still viable type of potential opponents, but I'm not going to wait for them. I put it out, take advantage of it, because eventually Dan Severn is going to be too old. As it is, I've had to jump to a lot of extra hoops for that one. I had to go through an extra, CAT scan, myelogram, things of that nature, stress test, EKG, I passed them all with flying colors. And then I had to stand there before 7 athletic commissioners who cross-examined me as to why. They did do their due diligence. Is Severn in dire straits financially? Does he need another payday that bad? And they came up like, your record's impeccable. You've got phenomenal win-loss ratio. You got all this stuff going. They're like, why? At your age, why? And I said, well, gentlemen, I'm not asking to go against this young buck over there. I said, because my time has moved along. But to go against another vintage person, it's very marketable to do a Shamrock 3 or to do a Gracie Severn 2. Very marketable. Will it ever live up to the hype? Oh, no. Won't live up to hype whatsoever.
My last question is, you come into these Comic Cons, you do these appearances for wrestling promotions, but one of the cool things I found out is that you also go into police stations or police academies, and you help train them on how to defend themselves against people taking them to the ground and stuff like that?
The thing that I do, especially, I started this back probably around 1994. I had a national training company that approached me first and said, "Can you help us with our ground defensive tactics program?" And I'm like, I have no idea because I don't know what you guys do in the first place. And so I said, "So if you show it to me," and they show it to me, I go, "Oh yeah, I can improve upon what I'm seeing here right now." You know, and that's where, that way do I work with law enforcement, I work with corrections, air marshals, border patrol, and military. I take a great deal of pride in what I do with the military and law enforcement because they don't have a referee.
No.
Yeah, there's nobody pulling them
off.
My
dad used to be a police officer, so that's why I take much respect in hearing the story and wanting to get it out there.
They're going to say, oh, you got me. Your tap out means lights out forever.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very passionate, and I get rather angry when I realize you have politicians and legislators that have never done your job trying to tell you now how to conduct your job. I'm like, you live in a lily white gated community.
Yep.
You think you know how the other half lives? No, you don't. Your closest thing to understanding what an immigrant is you have a servant that either cuts your grass or who does your house clean or something for you. Mm-hmm. You don't understand. It's ridiculous. To me, unless you're a former law enforcement, you have no right to put your two cents worth on anything. Same way with military, the whole nine yards. Unless you're military, you understand the mindset of strategic defense of that nature. No right to put your two cents worth into it. Again, everyone has a gift, a skill set with them. My gift is I understand physical mechanics. I am living proof of that because of, to have had 100 plus matches. I'm not cauliflower eared up. My nose still sits in the center of my face. Teeth crooked. They've always been crooked. They're still originals. Getting punched and beat up, you can have an intelligent conversation with me on different things. Whereas there's a lot of guys out there, you would be hard pressed to have an intelligent conversation because their speech is a little bit slurred. The wiring is not quite all connected. A lot of this concussions is taking place in professional wrestling, same way as it happens in MMA, same way as it happens in football, helmet to helmet collisions. That more and more this is on the minds of a lot of people nowadays in athletics. So what is it doing to the brain?
All right. Thank you, Dan Severn, for having...
intellectual beast here right now.
Intellectual
beast.
Thank you again for coming on the PW podcast. I assume that's which one it's going to be on.
I'm assuming this is going to be an offshoot of PW Presents, I didn't say that accordingly, but...
And also, it's going to be, you're watching it already on the Cape Championship Wrestling YouTube page. But again, thank you so much for having us. Dalton, thank you for letting me come on here with you.
Well, let me throw one plug here. If you want to know more about what Dan to Be Severn still does, go to my own website at dansevern.com, www.dansevern.com. Even though you may not see me on television doing a mixed martial arts match, you may not see me on TV doing a professional match, rest assured, I'm still involved in those industries. On top of running a 10,000 square foot training facility on my property, on top of all the stuff I do with first responders, on top of any other things that you gentlemen don't even know about. But the beast will not retire in any kind of a fashion. I will continue to move forth and help a lot of people.
The original beast.
The original beast, yes. Yeah.
Again, thank you so much. Dalton, you want to send it off?
Y'all enjoy your night.
Thank you.